Welcome to Secrets of Self-Employment. I'm David Steele. I'm founder of Relationship Coaching Institute, longtime self-employed person. And with me today is Frankie Doran, who is the president and CEO of Relationship Coaching Institute, who is a converted corporate hack into self-employment. Welcome, Frankie.
Thank you, David.
So to kick off the new year, we really would like to address the topic of self-employment because I'll tell you, just in the past week, in the newspaper in my area, this San Jose, California, Silicon Valley, the San Jose Mercury News headlines include record number of Americans on unemployment in 2009. We have a 10% unemployment rate, which means 10% of employable adults are out of a job. And in Silicon Valley, it's 12%. And here's another one. Oh, by the way, that headline came out on January 1st, on New Year's Day. What a welcome to the new year. Here's another one from this week. Job dissatisfaction on steady rise in U.S. 65% of employed persons, people with jobs, report being dissatisfied with their job. They're not happy with their job. And on that same page down below is bankruptcy filings see big jump in U.S. And that's scary. People have to go to court, and you know, they're out of money, and they have more debt, and it really, you know, you have to start all over. It's really a tough situation. And here's, on a brighter note, this is Monday, January 4th. There is an article here in the local news about a guy who was a CEO, and he left his CEO job, and he wanted to retire, basically, but he ended up starting a nonprofit. And what he's doing is he's helping people, poor people, who have access to, you know, a backyard or something, helping them learn how to grow their own food, basically start gardens. And he started a whole nonprofit around this. He got a bunch of other nonprofits on board with this. And now he's created his own job, his own organization, based on his passion. And this is what I've done with Relationship Coaching Institute and in my entire career. I've followed my passion and created my own jobs, and I've made the biggest contribution that I could possibly make by following my own direction, like this gentleman has. And I really would like to see more of us do that and not be so dependent upon jobs. So that's pretty much why we're here. We're passionate about self-employment. We are doing this today because we want to address a significant social problem. And, of course, one of the options for self-employment is being a coach, coaching and relationship coaching. So if you decide you want to go that direction, you want to check out Relationship Coaching Institute, and that's great. We're not assuming that you're here because of that. We're assuming you're here because you would like to learn how you can be self-employed, how you can be your own boss, have your own business. So here's what we'd like to do. We would like to share with you what we know about the fastest, easiest way to build your own business. We would like to talk about some ideas for businesses that you can start for little or no money that will allow you to earn more than your old job within a year. If you have a job, we would like to talk about how you can transition from paycheck to self-employment with low or no risk. So here we are. Welcome to Secrets of Self-Employment. Frankie?
Thank you, David. I think that we should just make sure that everyone has access to the study guide and knows that there is a study guide. It'll make following along a whole bunch easier, save you a lot of writing. That summarizes most of the information that we're going to be covering on this call. And there's also an agenda, which is on page 2 of the study guide. So we're not going to review that, but it is there. You can kind of follow along. And we will refer to the pages of the study guide as we kind of move through each section. You started with a pretty brief introduction as to why we're doing this. I know that you want to say some more about self-employment. And then we're going to share our stories, aren't we?
Yeah. Okay. So as an introduction, let me just say that in my perception is in today's world, there is really no such thing as job security. That really you get a job when an employer needs you. You lose a job when the employer doesn't need you. There is no loyalty involved. It's just a business transaction. And really, whether you know it or not, believe it or not, everyone is self-employed because you have to sell yourself to an employer. You are a commodity. You have productivity to sell of some kind, so you're self-employed anyway. And in my mind, the best way to prevent losing a job is not to have one, and that the best cure for unemployment is self-employment. I see folks on unemployment for months and for years. And in my own family, my son-in-law, my brother-in-law, my son-in-law has been unemployed for quite a while, has a lot of trouble finding a job. And my brother-in-law is about to be laid off from a manufacturing plant. And he's scared. And I see people hunting for jobs on the internet, going to the Employment Development Department and sending out resumes and going to interviews. And, you know, okay, but really all the time and effort spent searching and applying for jobs and stressing about how to get a job or how to get by on unemployment benefits and filling out paperwork and standing in line, worrying about losing your current job, accepting a job you don't like for lower pay to survive. In my mind, all this would be better spent working for yourself, building your own business, finding ways to leverage your skills and your resources to be of service to others in some way, to work for yourself. And we really want to show you how to do that and give you lots and lots of ideas for how to do that today. So there's an interesting fact that came up in our research for this program today, and realized that we are not experts in self-employment. Frankie and I were relationship coaches, and we are experts in relationships and coaching and building a relationship coaching practice and getting clients. But, you know, we're not experts in self-employment, so we had to research for this program. It was fun research, by the way, and one of the interesting things that I discovered when I was doing my research was 8.7% of job seekers gained employment through starting their own businesses in the second quarter of 2009. Wow. So people are already getting it. They're losing their jobs. They're figuring, well, you know, rather than look for another job, I'll just be my own boss. And I would like you, really, really would like you to be able to do that as well.
Yes, we are absolutely not experts on self-employment. We're both pro-self-employment because it's about who we are. I mean, it's part of our makeup. And I think that's important to say that people are either inclined to be self-employed or not. And we're not saying that being employed is a bad thing and that everyone, you know, should be self-employed. Not at all, because it is not for everybody. But if you feel unsettled or uncomfortable working for someone else, if you always come back to this dream of working for yourself, it means you're wired to be self-employed, okay?
Yeah.
And today, that's what we want to talk about, and I think that's why you're here. I don't think you'd be here if you weren't interested in being self-employed.
Yeah, and a lot of folks are scared of self-employment, and they wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole in a million years, and you know, getting a job and getting a paycheck is what they really, really want. However, the 65% factor of people that are dissatisfied with their jobs, what would you rather have, a job you don't like or, you know, taking a little risk and being your own boss? So, you know, that's a question that only you can answer. So let's get into a little bit about who we are and our story, and maybe you can relate, maybe you can't. But when I was a kid, I always wanted to earn my own money. You know, my family didn't have a lot of money, and I enjoyed what I could buy with money. And from an early, early age, I always found ways to earn my own money. I mowed lawns. I helped out around the neighborhood. One of my favorite things was sweeping up at a donut shop after they made all the donuts early in the morning, and I got to take home day-old donuts. So I've always been a bit of an entrepreneur. I've always kind of followed my own direction. And the jobs that I've had in my life, I've had plenty of them, I always felt kind of on a leash. I've always felt kind of controlled, and, you know, I always did my best, and I felt like I was helping other people shine, helping other people look good, helping other people make profit and run a successful business. And I always looked at that and say, well, you know, I want to do that for me. I want to shine for myself. I want to build my own business rather than make them look good. So I've always kind of felt tethered by having a job. And I love the freedom of self-employment, that I can do what I want, where I want, how I want. A few years ago, I was wondering how to pay the mortgage. It was around the end of the year. Expenses were high. Income was low. And I said, okay, end of the month is coming. My mortgage payment is coming due. It's really tight right now. How am I going to come up with the money for this mortgage? And I got an idea. All I had to do was sell. So I figured out something I could sell, and I let my network know it was available, and I had plenty of takers for it, and I was able to pay my mortgage. And to me, that really hit home for me. Wow, I have a lot of control here. It's my responsibility and my choice how much money I make. My father is an artist. He's been an artist. He's been passionate about art, you know, ever since I can remember. And he's had the same reaction to jobs that I've had ever since I can remember. And to him, a job is always a way to earn money for his art. And he's never been able to make a living as an artist, but he's such a talented artist. And, you know, rather than doing some of the things I've seen him do, like, you know, drive trucks or being a part-time substitute mail carrier, I would just love to have seen him be able to make a living through his art. That was his dream. But he hated selling his art. He hated, you know, didn't like marketing or business or anything like that. He was an artist. And here's an example about him. One of his phases, he went through many phases. One of his phases was radiator core art. He would take a magazine photo of like a Victorian from San Francisco, and he would duplicate it as a radiator sculpture that you hang on the wall. It was beautiful. He sold every one effortlessly. People loved it. People snapped it up. They wanted him to do a radiator sculpture of their Victorian or their historical house or building. And after a while, he tired of that and went on to something else and never looked back. He never again made another radiator sculpture. Well, if he wanted to make a living on his art, all he had to do was generate one or two radiator sculptures per month. That could have done it. But he either never figured it out or he didn't want to do it, but in the jobs that he took in order to get by, he was always miserable. So, you know, these are just some of my experiences that I want to share with you as the reason I'm doing this, the reason I'm self-employed, the reason I love it, and the reason I want you to become self-employed as well, if that's what you want. And I'd like to introduce you my business partner, Frankie Doran, who is a very talented lady, and one of the reasons I was attracted to working with her in the first place is that her last job, she was vice president of marketing for McDonald's Canada. And yeah, I need that kind of corporate marketing clout in my corner. So, Frankie, what's your story?
Thank you. Just to clarify, not vice president of marketing. You always say that.
Executive vice president of marketing.
Yeah, the president. Well, just call me the president of McDonald's. Why not? Well, you know, my story is actually very similar. I've been an entrepreneur from the time I was 11, and my dad really was the role model for me because he was always self-employed. And I'm the eldest of 8 children, and at the age of 10, my dad had a massive heart attack, which really set us back financially. In fact, it led to his business and personal bankruptcy. So we had, you know, quite a significant change in income and, you know, for several years. I still can't look at bologna to this day. Fried bologna was a staple with potato salad. So that combination just gives me the shudders. But anyway, so here I am, the head of this clan of 8 children. And we lived in northern Ontario in Canada. And so I undertook to bring in additional income to our family. And so northern Ontario has a lot of blueberries. And so my first business was a blueberry picking operation. And I literally sold hundreds of baskets to a local reseller. And, you know, this was negotiating the price with him and making commitments to production numbers, organizing my brothers and sisters. And I even had the 4-year-old twins. They had a job, so they were not left out of this family business. And, you know, throughout my life, jobs for corporations were interspersed with these periods of self-employment. Because I always had this itch or this desire to be self-employed, to be in control of my own destiny. And during the 80s and early 90s, I ran several very successful businesses with annual income in the $8 to $9 million range. And unfortunately, the last business I had of that magnitude went into bankruptcy because of a situation with a joint venture partner. But because I had personal guarantees and collateral mortgages with my business bank, I lost everything on a personal level as well. So for about a year, you know, I was totally devastated. It was like my whole identity had been stripped away. And then I landed a great job as a project manager for McDonald's Canada. And on the first day of my work, I woke up at 5 o'clock. I heard a loud bang, and I found my husband dead in the bathroom from a heart attack. So, you know, I look back now at the timing of this, and, you know, as sad and as difficult as his loss was, it was a miracle that I had a job, you know. So it was wonderful, and I accepted it. I was happy for it and grateful for it. But it didn't take me long, probably 3-4 years, before I got the itch again and, you know, started another company. It was an internet publishing company. I developed a line of electronic books. I had the rights to over 600 books, you know, and I was really ahead of the curve. I was one of the people who was in the forefront of electronic publishing. And I had relationships with top authors and publishers, and I had conversations with Amazon, but it was just too early. People were saying, no one's going to want to read electronic books. You know, they want a hard copy. And, you know, after a couple of years of this, even though it was exciting, it was creative, I just needed money. I ran out of money, and I went back to McDonald's. And I remained there for another 5 years until 2003, and I had this epiphany. It's like it just hit me over the head. I was attending a funeral of a coworker's father, and he happened to be one of the leading cardiologists in Toronto. And the church was extremely large. The sanctuary alone seated about 2,000 people, and every single seat was taken. Plus, people were standing 2 and 3 deep along the perimeter in the sanctuary. And they spilled out into the vestibule, and they were literally standing shoulder to shoulder like sardines. And they even spilled out into the walkway and the grounds outside the church. There was absolutely no room inside. There were so many people. But what really moved me and what caused me to really understand this dynamic about who I am and, you know, being self-employed is part of that. Half of these people, thousands and thousands of people, were weeping openly, okay, during the service. I didn't know the man. You know, I didn't have the pleasure of meeting him, but I was so taken aback by the show of emotion because it was a testament to his life and his legacy. And I'm sitting there in, amongst all these people, and I had this shocking realization that when I died, you know, I visualized my service. Who was going to come? You know, surely my family and friends, some people from McDonald's. But what was my legacy? What was I leaving behind? I mean, that I helped to sell more hamburgers? Like, was that my legacy? And I said, no, like, that's not going to be it. I have to find something that is going to be in alignment with my life purpose. I have to figure out what my life purpose is. I have to be in service, and I have to figure that out. And within about a month, maybe 6 months to 6 weeks, I handed in my resignation, and I made a pretty good salary, you know, pretty good salary, I'll tell you that. And I'm going to speak about how I transitioned to self-employment and how you have to be strategic, how you have to think about it, how you have to plan for it, because it's not wise just to jump. I mean, you know, you can do anything, but you have to plan for it, because if you don't, you know, the likelihood is that you're not going to succeed. So I found my passion, which is coaching, and, you know, my life has changed significantly. That's my story, anyway, in a nutshell. Okay. And David, do you want to share some facts about self-employment? Now, we have on page 4 of the guide some information there if you want to follow along with what David is going to talk about.
Yeah, David? I would like to share with you some facts just so that you kind of understand the lay of the land. First of all, we already talked about the 10% unemployment rate, which means 15.4 million adults. Employable adults are unemployed currently. You know, that's huge, considering that there's 154 million total workers. And what's interesting is that 21.7 million, or 14% of all these total, all these workers, have non-employer businesses. Now, in the lexicon here, a non-employer business is a business that doesn't employ anybody. It's just one person, meaning it's a solopreneur or a small business of just one person, which means the self-employed person. So you can interpret that to say that 14% of all workers are self-employed. Of these, 5.4 million work from home. I work from home, and Frankie works from home, and you know, this is very familiar to us. 25% of self-employed people, 3.5% of all workers. So out of 100 people walking down the street, 3.5% of them will work from home. I already mentioned the statistic of 8.7% of job seekers in the second quarter 2009 gained employment by starting their own businesses. As a result of this program, I'd like to see that number spike. So the top five non-employer businesses and kind of self-employed businesses, top five in the U.S. are number one, this is in rank order, so the top business would be professional and business services. So most self-employed people are professionals or conduct business services of some kind. Number two is construction. So this is the trades. These are people working with their hands, and they have a skill. Number three, education and health services. So people that teach something and people that take care of others. Number four, wholesale and retail trade. So people that sell stuff, have a store, or, you know, they are salespeople working on commission or something like that. And then number five is other, which is the category that includes people from working from home. So these are the top five non-employer businesses, top five categories of self-employed people. And you might keep in mind which category you might fit in or you want to fit in. Frankie and I, we fit in the number one. Yay, us. So the most rapid growth sectors in today's economy are number one, consulting services. This is the fastest, most rapid growing sector of the economy, consulting services. Consultants have an area of expertise. They know a lot about a particular thing. They are hired to solve problems, fix problematic situations, lend their expertise on other people's behalf. Number two, the second most rapid growing sector of the economy is individual and family services. So these are services directly to individuals and families. This could be everything from, you know, massage therapy to babysitting. And then the third most rapid growing sector of the economy is home health care services. Our population is aging, and when people get older, they want to live in their homes. They don't want to go anyplace else. They don't want to live with their children. They don't want to go to an old, you know, an old person's home. And they can no longer do everything for themselves, so they need support. So home health care services is the third most rapid growing sector. So think about, what can you do in any one of those three areas? The most rapid decline in today's economy, what we found out, beware if you're interested in any one of these. Number one most rapid declining sector is apparel manufacturing. So if your dream is to manufacture T-shirts and sell them, well, yeah, good luck. Number two is footwear manufacturing. I imagine because most of our footwear now is coming from overseas. It's a lot cheaper than can be manufactured here. And number three, which is surprising, is federal enterprises. So this is not necessarily the federal government. This is federal enterprises like the, you know, the post office and things like that. So, you know, my wife works for the VA, and I always think that, you know, man, if anybody has job security, you know, somebody working with the Veterans Administration would have job security, especially because there's more and more veterans coming from, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan and all that. And she absolutely certainly does have job security, but the federal government is no longer the bastion of job security that it once was. You know, I go back to my point, my belief, the reason we're doing this is I believe the best security is self-employment. You are no longer secure working for somebody else. So those are some facts and statistics that we wanted to share with you today. It's going to lay the, you know, this is the lay of the land. This is what we're dealing with in today's economy. On page 5 of the study guide, ladies and gentlemen, Frankie will introduce you to our top benefits of self-employment.
Yeah, and there may be more, but, you know, at some point, you got to stop. So the first is job security. Now, David already talked a little bit about this, and it may seem strange to think that, you know, the fact that you're self-employed gives you job security. But if you think about it, as long as someone else is in control of how a company is run, you don't have control over whether your job's going to be cut. And there's just too many variables that are not within your domain. So, you know, I think job security, because that is within your control. When you're self-employed, everything is within your control. You have the freedom, the flexibility to create exactly what you want and how you want it, and that provides job security. The next one is financial freedom. And, you know, with most jobs, with all jobs pretty well, I guess, there's a salary ceiling for most people. You know, most people who have been employed, the ceiling is usually not enough. I mean, we think our salaries, you know, we're worth much more than what we're being paid. And so we don't think we're being adequately compensated. But when you're self-employed, the only limitation you have to how much money you create is yourself. You really have the freedom to create as much income as you want. So that's why we say, you know, financial freedom is one of the benefits. No boss. Well, yeah.
What can I say about that? This is my favorite one.
I know. I can say a lot about that. I mean, I love collaboration.
Although sometimes you act like my boss.
That's only in your head,
David.
David,
we need this. David, can you do this?
Well, you know, I love collaboration and teamwork, but I don't like having a boss. And sometimes I think, I mean, I was thinking about this, David, I think maybe I think I'm smarter than I really am, and maybe that's part of the problem, you know, because I've always found fault with most of my bosses, that it's like the Peter, is it the Peter principle?
I've always thought I could do a much better job than they could.
Yeah. Too often I've seen people reach their level of incompetence and be at a more senior position than I am, and frankly, I resented it. I admit it, you know, not perfect. I resented it. And there have only been a handful of bosses that I truly respected for their abilities, for their way of thinking and their integrity, but those are far and few between. So the no boss, that's a great benefit for me anyway. The next one is do what you want when and how you want. You know, when you run your own business, you can take off whenever you want. I mean, you have to have discipline. You have to know what you've committed to, and that goes without saying. But you can create your schedule to fit your lifestyle. You know, if you want to go for a walk in the middle of the day or take a nap, it's up to you. No one's going to say, hey, you know, why are you not at your desk? Why isn't your nose to the grindstone? You don't have to report to anyone but yourself. Tax deductions. Well, you know, all your business expenses and even part of your personal expenses can be tax deductible. Now, it depends where you're residing, but in Canada, we can deduct part of our house expenses if we run a business out of our homes. And I guess you can do that as well, David.
I have about, you know, one-third of my home devoted to my business. You better believe I write that off.
Yeah, absolutely. The next benefit is you can employ family. You know, you know those pesky teenagers who can't get a job? Maybe they need a part-time job or a summer job. Well, if you need the resources, it's a win-win because you can employ them, you can deduct that expense, you can keep them out of trouble, you know, you can role model for them, you can interact with them. I mean, it's really a great opportunity, not only teenagers,
And then you can charge them rent.
That's a good idea. And then the next one is greater upside in general. That really should have been the last point, but you know, you really do have a better quality of life if you are in balance. And this is the challenge because most employed folks do not lead balanced lives. They're very stressed. They're on a treadmill, and they just never seem to get off, you know. And when you are in control of your employment and how you earn a living, you know, there's just so many benefits that, I mean, we couldn't even name. The next one is controlling variables. Well, you know, similar to creating, getting greater upside in general, I mean, you have better control over all aspects of your life and work, and it's within your control, okay? It's your destiny. It's your decision. It's not someone else's. You can build equity. You can grow your company, and you can reap the financial rewards of your efforts in lots of ways by, you know, expensing deductions that you wouldn't normally be able to. Travel, if you're going on a business trip, you can kind of add sightseeing to that and, you know, just generally kind of build your business up and build some equity.
Yeah, well, what that means is you're creating a legacy. You're creating something that has market value all by itself, an entity. And a self-employed professional, somebody who's, you know, like a coach or a therapist or a consultant, if they're working for themselves, you know, David Steele relationship coach, I'm not necessarily building a business or building equity, building an entity that I can sell, but if I create conscious dating in Silicon Valley, I can build a company that I can then sell and other people can take over. So It's the way that most of the very, very wealthy people in the world have made their money is by building a business and then selling it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're never stuck. You always have options when you have a self-employed mindset. I think it shifts you into being more creative. It allows the creative juices to flow because the buck stops with you, you know. And when you're in that mindset, you really are never stuck for options. Like, you're thinking along the lines of, you know, what's next? How do I improve this? How do I keep doing what I'm doing? And the only thing that limits you is you. The next benefit is doing what you love, you know, following your passion. And how many people can say that they do what they love? Very few people. What was the number you said, David? 55% are not happy in the
65% of employed people are dissatisfied with their job.
Those are people who are not loving what they're doing. Okay, so imagine waking up every morning, instead of groaning and feeling down because you have to go to work, you're excited about your day. You're excited about what you've planned, what you're going to accomplish, what you're going to create. The next benefit is you can make a difference. And this, you know, depends on what you do, but you can make a difference following your passion. And even if it's just being a role model for your children, helping them to see that life should be about following your passion and about being happy, that alone, if that's, you know, the only thing that you accomplish in terms of making a difference, that's huge. You know, that's the legacy piece. Creating a balanced life, you know, as I said earlier, too many people don't lead balanced lives. It's the treadmill of work, the commuting, the working at home, or even working weekends. Every time I go out on a weekend with my husband and I see these offices and they've got loads of vehicles sitting in the parking lot, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, there are those poor drudges sitting there working the weekend, you know, and so if it's a beautiful sunny day, I just think, you know, what a waste. But that's the benefit of being in your own business. You can do what you want. We know that self-employment can mean a lot of work, but if you have the autonomy to carve out the time for your family and for rest and for fun, that's really important because no one's going to dictate how you spend your time, only you. So that really ladders up to creating this balanced life. And finally, you benefit from your own sweat and creativity. Creating and owning and leveraging your creativity is just an amazingly wonderful feeling, and it's very empowering, and I think it feeds your soul. I mean, that just is like a generator to create, you know, more ideas and more great things. So those are the benefits. Now, if you continue to look at page 5 of the study guide, I'm going to talk about some of the obstacles to self-employment. And the biggest one is fear of risk. You know, when you're self-employed, it's all about you. The buck stops with you. And many people are afraid of failure. You know, what if I don't succeed? What if I don't have it in me to be successful? And these are the thoughts that cause people not to take the risk. Lack of knowledge, fear of the unknown. You know, people often don't take stock of their skills, and they often have more skills or abilities than they realize. But, you know, if you're missing something that you need to realize your dream, get the training you need, you know. And the other thing to remember is you don't have to do everything yourself. You know, most businesses need legal and financial advice. Doesn't mean you have to be a lawyer or an accountant to run a business successfully. Just hire the expertise, you know, when you need it. All you really need is to have the passion and be the expert in the area, the key area of your business. That's what you need, you know, have a lot of proficiency with. The next obstacle is, you know, this dependency on a paycheck. Yes, you know, I get it. I was there. I was glad after my husband died that I had a paycheck. Thank goodness. It was comforting. It saved my life. But you just have to show up. You basically don't take any risk. You get paid. You know, I mean, how easy is that? But what's the price you're paying for that? You know, really think about that. 65% of people are unhappy. That takes a toll on you, whether you realize it or not. The next obstacle is low self-esteem. You know, we all have limiting beliefs that hold us back, and low self-esteem is a big one. It will cripple you. It'll keep you from doing what you love. So if you have a dream to be self-employed, but you always hear things in your head like, you know, I can't do that, no one will buy that service from me, you know, you need to pay attention to that and you need to get some help to reframe these subconscious thoughts because they're not supporting your conscious goals. They're undermining you. They're sabotaging you. Okay, so being aware of that is critical. Complacency or habit, yeah, you know, days roll into weeks and weeks into months and suddenly you realize, you know, you're 50 years old or whatever and you wasted time working towards achieving your dream because you just didn't make the effort. It takes effort. It takes being aware, being conscious, making choices. Lack of role models or support. You know, my father modeled to me that self-employment was a good way to live. And he wasn't always successful, but he had a great life. And maybe your role model had a different perspective. It doesn't matter. What matters is that if you've been dancing around this idea of being self-employed, if you keep coming back to it, you know, you keep thinking about this dream, then move in that direction and get the support you need or the training you need to create your dream. And then finally, we have dependency upon benefits, health benefits, retirement benefits, etc. Well, the way I look at it, you are your retirement plan. Okay, do the math. Is what the company contributes to your health or retirement plan sufficient to outweigh you not being happy and feeling continually stressed? I mean, there's more than just the dollars and cents to consider here. And there's lots of other options, you know, in terms of you creating a retirement fund, getting health benefits that you pay for, that type of thing. So those are the key obstacles to self-employment.
Yeah, Frankie, I'd like to chime in on the last one, being dependent upon benefits like health insurance and all that.
Yeah.
Because this is what held me back from full-time private practice for a couple of years. And I was working part-time in an agency where I had health benefits and retirement benefits and all that stuff. And I was afraid of full-time self-employment because I figured, well, you know, it would be so expensive to replace that. Well, the money from this nonprofit agency was peanuts. And when I figured out that all I needed to replace not only the income but the benefits was 3 clients a week, 3 billable hours a week in my private practice, that's all I needed to replace my health insurance and everything else I was getting from them, then it became a no-brainer.
Yeah, what a wake-up call.
Yeah, so that's something that you can do as well. If you're looking at self-employment and one of your reasons for no is health insurance, whatever else, well, add up what it might cost to get your own health insurance and contribute to your own retirement plan so that you can break free from your employer. You might be surprised how it's very, very, very doable. So when you quantify things, it becomes less scary.
Absolutely. So if we go to page 6 of the study guide, okay, you'll see some information there about self-employment options. And David, you're going to cover that, right?
This is the fun part. Lots and lots of options for self-employment. And in my research for this program, I bought lots of books. I have some of them in front of me. 400 latest and greatest small business ideas. The best home business ideas for people 50 and over. 101 businesses you can start with $1,000 for stay-at-home moms and dads. There's lots and lots of ideas out there. And for the purposes of today's program, I would like to focus on options that don't require going back to school, don't require thousands of dollars that you don't have. So things that are very, very doable for you to do today or within a very short period of time. So the main categories on page 6 of the study guide involve personal services. These are things you can do for people. Packaging information, which is like writing books or articles or writing marketing copy or writing grants or teaching or even I have a neighborhood girl who's going to be selling my conscious dating book and program to her friends as an affiliate. So she gets commission for that. So people need information, they want information, and you can package that information in ways that they will buy. Seasonal businesses. Last week I pruned my peach tree, one of my trees in my yard. And I'll tell you, if somebody would have come by and said, yeah, yeah, I notice you have a peach tree, I'll prune it for you for $50, I would have taken them up on that. So there's all sorts of seasonal businesses you can do. I know people that love crafts, and they make things and then sell them during Christmas time, and it pretty much pays their bills for the rest of the year. Number four is door-to-door stuff. Now, you might poo-poo this and think, well, no, I don't want to do that. But let me tell you, I got inspired. Part of the inspiration for this program is some months ago, I was working in my yard, and a guy came up to me and said, hey, I noticed the number on your house painted on the curb is faded. Can't even read it. How about I paint it for you for $10, and if you don't like it, you don't have to pay for it. So that was an offer he couldn't refuse. So I said, okay. And so he had a backpack. He set his backpack on the ground. He took out a couple of cans of paint and a stencil, and he spray painted the house number on the curb. It looked great. Took him all of 5 minutes or so. And I paid him $10, and he was off down the street painting another house number. Wow, this guy, he can make money anytime he wants. All he's got to do is put his backpack on and walk down the street. There are so many door-to-door things that you can do. If you, like when I was a kid, I used to do yard work for my neighbors. Walk down the street, and whose yard is out of control that needs help, go up to the door and see if you can be of service. Detailing cars, house painting, tree service, window washing, hauling, gutter cleaning. That's another great seasonal business, gutter cleaning. It's dangerous to get up on your roof and clean your gutters. Your gutters have to be cleaned. If you were to provide that service for a month or two a year, you know, what a great side business. So door-to-door work can be fun, interacting with the public, getting fresh air, working with your hands. And I certainly enjoy doing that in my own yard. I wouldn't mind picking up a few extra bucks if I had the time doing that for other people as well. And number five is professional services. This is like consulting and coaching and teaching of all kinds. If you have an area of expertise, there's many ways to leverage that area of expertise to make a living from it. And that's what we focus on at buildingyouridealpractice.com and Relationship Coaching Institute. Number six is product sales. A lot of people are involved with multi-level marketing, selling stuff on eBay. I mentioned the affiliate program, which means you sell something for other people and you get a commission from it, and it's all in the Internet. There are distributorships of various kinds, like Avon, Mary Kay, Pampered Chef, Amway. You know, when I was a kid, one of the entrepreneurial things I did was I was an Amway distributor. And these are things that, you know, anybody can do. Number seven category is the crafts and trades. So if you have a skill, you're able to build something, fix something, and it's always marketable. Category number eight is entertainment. Now, you see DJs at parties, putting on theme parties for people. If you have a talent like singing or playing an instrument or doing magic, even if you have an area of expertise that people would enjoy learning, like cooking or gardening or dancing or whatever it might be, you can teach that. You can conduct classes doing that. There's all sorts of ways to be in the entertainment industry without being a rock star. And if you were to put a little display ad in your local paper, you know, theme parties or dance lessons or whatever it might be, you know, you will get people interested in that. And when they experience positive results or they like your class, then they tell their friends and you build a whole business around that. Category number nine is tourism. When I travel, I enjoy experiencing the area in which I travel to. And I especially enjoy it if I can experience it with a local, somebody who knows all the places to go, who knows the history of the area. And wouldn't it be great to conduct tours of some kind? I can conduct tours in my area of hiking tours, backpacking tours, kayaking tours, all the things that I do and enjoy. If somebody was from out of town and they enjoyed that, and you know, I know all the spots to go, and you know, I could show them. It's a fun thing to do. And then category number 10 is specialized websites. So this is Internet. This is services, products on the Internet. An example of that, just one of many, many, many examples that I encountered over the years, is some years ago I found out that I had a heel spur. I was experiencing some pain on my foot. I didn't know why. I go to the doctor and says, oh, you have a heel spur. Like, what can we do about it? Well, can't do anything about it. That was quite discouraging. So I go on online and I look up heel spurs, and I find this website, heelspurs.com. And there's all sorts of information about heel spurs, all sorts of advice that my doctor didn't give me. and all sorts of products that would be helpful. It was one of the most helpful websites I've ever found, and boy, what a specialized niche, you know, heel spurs. You have an area of interest. You can create a website or a store or something around that interest, and chances are you can narrow it enough that people will find you because you're pretty much the only one or one of very few in that niche. So it's a lot of fun when you can do that, like heelspurs.com. So those are the main categories. And on page 7 of the study guide, let's talk about options that almost anyone can do. So first, there's the concierge types of things. These are being a personal assistant of some kind. Shopping for people. Coordinating home and car repair. It's like when people have to have a contractor over to fix their house or they have to take their car in for repair, they have to take time off of work to do that. There's lots of people that if they knew of a resource of somebody who would do it for them, then they would be happy to have that done for them. Paying bills, researching and supervising vendors. For example, I have a tree in my front yard that has to come down. There's lots of tree people out there. I don't know which one would be a good one to hire. I don't necessarily want to be the one home to supervise them. So wouldn't it be great if there was somebody that specialized in researching vendors and supervising, you know, the work getting done? That would free me up tremendously. And then there's things like driving. Everybody drives. Almost everybody drives. Laundry, cooking, being a personal chef, or everything that you do at home, everything that you do for yourself is something that you can hire yourself out to do for other people. And then it's just a matter of marketing. It's just a matter of getting those clients. And that actually is not that hard, and we'll talk about that. Next is pets. A lot of people have pets, and pets need care. They need to be taken care of, even when people are on vacation or at work. They need sitting. They need exercising. So there's lots and lots of things that pet owners are happy to have help with if they had a resource that they knew and trusted for that. Children, child care, babysitting, tutoring, sports, you know, classes. Let's say, you know, you're a basketball nut. And let's say you live in a town where there's a lack of resources for people that enjoy basketball. Wouldn't it be great to organize a basketball club or provide basketball tutoring or lessons or coaching? There's so many possibilities just around that. So, you know, children, lots and lots of things you can do around children. The elderly, same thing. The elderly are in positions where oftentimes they need assistance caring for themselves, they need caring for their home. The elderly people get lonely. They need companionship, and their family isn't always able to be there for them. You know, one of the statistics that I know is that 25% of adults in the U.S. live alone. A lot of those are older, and elderly need companionship. They need somebody to check in on them. And nowadays, people in my age bracket, I'm in my 50s now, 52, you know, we have elderly parents. And wouldn't it be nice to have a resource to help us check in on our elderly parents and assist them? Elderly need case management and advocacy. There's a whole bureaucracy around, you know, medical care, medical insurance, estates, you know, you name it. Elderly need transportation. You know, my father lives, you know, 2.5 hours away, and he's in a position now where he can't drive anymore. And I can't help him. And he's the kind that's independent, and he doesn't like to ask for help, and he doesn't like to navigate bureaucracies. And boy, would I like a case manager there to help him get qualified for the local transportation agency that helps the elderly. Or if I had a lot of money, then I can just hire somebody to be his personal chauffeur or transportation whenever he wanted it. And welfare checks, being able to have somebody just check in on the elderly person if their family lives from, you know, far away. And then there's assistant things, things like doing chores and shopping for the elderly person. Lots and lots of possibilities there. And remember, these are things that almost anyone can do. And then there's your home. Home repair, home improvement, home maintenance, cleaning, management, organizing things, house sitting, home decorating. Man, I always need help with that. You know, my wife's pretty good at it, and she knows what she likes. I'm terrible. So, in my bachelor days, you know, it would be great to have somebody, and I have had friends give me advice on what colors to use and things like that. So home decorating, if you're good at home decorating, you know, that is a great skill to have. And then there's consulting. Things like if a homeowner is wanting to add on to their home or figure out, should I tear this down or should I remodel it, or is it time to sell, or there's all sorts of huge questions that have huge implications that would be great to be talking with an expert about. So consulting with various things around the home would be great. And then there's things like events. Do you put on birthday parties for your kids? Well, you can do that for other people. Do you put on a bachelor party for your friends? Or you can do that for other people. There's things like putting on weddings, you know, being a wedding planner, or spa parties, or holiday catering. There's coordinating events. There's themed events. So let's say you are Irish, and your specialty is you help people put on Irish parties, and you have all the Irish party stuff in your garage, and that is your specialty. You know, what a great business that would be for people that are Irish or are interested in having an Irish party, and where else can you find that? Chances are, you know, you have an area of expertise. You have skills. You have interest. You have things that you can do or you could do or you want to do that would be very marketable. And then it's just a matter of building a business around it, and we are going to talk about that. So some questions that we have for you to help you explore your options. Please, you know, write these down and think about them. What problem doesn't have a good solution that you can do something about? What do you already do that you could be paid for? Last week I pruned my peach tree. I could prune other people's tree and make some money on that. Everything I do around the house, I could be paid for. What special skills do you have that you can create a business around? What need can you identify that you can creatively fill? So these are four questions that will help you focus on what you can do, what you want to do. Take a look around. What do you see other people doing? What do you see that is needed that there's not a good solution for? There's a cool strategy, and in my research I found this book. I really like the book. I recommend it. It's called Making a Living Without a Job. And in this book, the author has a strategy for discovering your business or building a business, and she calls it the $100 hour. Set aside 1 hour a day, or several times a week, set aside 1 hour. In fact, my advice would be to put it on your calendar, you know, create it, you know, make it like a doctor's appointment. Put it on your calendar, commit to it. Set aside 1 hour several times a week to find and work on an idea that will bring you $100. So here's the problem. Here's the question. How can I earn $100? So thinking about last week about pruning my peach tree, you know, it's a seasonal thing. I can look around my neighborhood and see all sorts of other trees that need to be pruned. And if I were to take my ladder and my pruner around to my neighbors, I could make $100, you know, pretty quick. So it's a great way to approach this, to quantify it to $100. Make it your goal to figure out how you could earn $100. And chances are you'll come up with something that you can create a business around. And I'll tell you from personal experience, the freedom and the joy of earning self-employment income, I did this myself. It's cash of choosing to do that, of taking the initiative and having the result be more money in your own pocket. That is so exciting. It's exhilarating. It's a feeling of power and freedom that I wish for you. So, Frankie, that's a bit about options for self-employment. How about talking to us about identifying our passion?
Absolutely. And you've identified a lot of options, and I think it's given people a lot of great ideas. But you know what's really important is, you know, here's your opportunity to do what you love. Okay, so David had this amazing list of possibilities. Some may have been of interest, others you may have said, ugh, you know, I wouldn't want to do that. So this is your opportunity to do what you love to do. It's the end of doing what you don't love doing.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's a new beginning.
Here's the thing. You could make money doing anything.
Yeah.
I, as the founder of Relationship Coaching Institute, you know, author of books and trainers, teacher, all sorts, you know, whatever else I am, I could make money pruning trees. So you can do what you want to do. You have a choice. But so the thing is, earning money and the ability to just earn money to survive is not a question. It's easy to do. You can do it now. Now let's talk about, you know, doing what you love.
Absolutely. So if you go to page 8 of the guide, okay, there's some points here. But in helping you figure out your passion, you really need to become clear about what things make you the happiest and give you the most fulfillment, okay? And you also need to be clear about what you want your life to look like. So, in other words, what's the context or what's the vision for your life? And most people haven't really clearly identified the vision for their life. So I recommend that you start with creating the vision. And it's a description of the life you want to lead. Okay, so, and it's a narrative. So you're going to write this, you know, picture of what your life looks like. And so some of the questions you can ask yourself are, you know, what activity is most fun for you? What do you love doing? You know, is it golfing? Is it volunteering? Is it mentoring? Is it gardening? Like, what is it? Then the next question you can ask is, what lifestyle do you want? You know, do you want to live on a boat and travel around in the Caribbean? Do you want to be in a cabin in the woods so you're close to nature? Do you want to be in a downtown condo close to theater and small cafes? Like, what's the lifestyle? And the next question is, what have you always dreamed of doing? What's the secret dream that keeps coming to mind over and over, year after year, you know? When you're kind of just gazing at the water, what pops into your head that you've always wanted to do that really moves you and motivates you? What gets you excited and gets your mind racing with ideas and your heart beating really fast? You know, that's what you want to tap into. You can also ask yourself, what are your hobbies and special interests? What provides you with fun and relaxation? Because that's an important part of being in balance. What do you see others doing that you want to do? You know, pay attention to those thoughts because they're going to be presented to you all the time. Just pay attention. Pick up on what you're telling yourself. And if money wasn't an issue, you know, you had unlimited ability, unlimited funding, what's the business that you would start? Okay, so the key here is there's no limitations, okay? No editing, no, you know, buts, no judgments around it. Just what would I love to do if I had the freedom to do anything?
Yeah, okay? Frankie, I laughed when you said no buts because... Well, it sounds funny, but you know, it does come up. It will come up. Expect it to come up. But realize that they do not have to hold you back.
Yeah. Because the purpose here is not about figuring out the how, okay? That comes later. The purpose of this exercise is to figure out the what. So you don't need to, you know, if the dream is being on a boat and traveling around the Caribbean, that's the life you want to lead. You know, don't start interjecting, well, how am I going to do that? How am I going to leave my job? Well, you know, all the details and the minutiae of how that actually happens, that's where you're going to get bogged down. So stop doing that. when the butt comes up, say, no, that is not the job. The job is creating the vision, the dream, the what. And then another question is, you know, what activity would provide you with the most meaning or purpose? You know, how can you bring your gift of service to the world in a way that brings you the most meaning and benefit? You know, what really moves you? What is a cause that you feel very strongly about? So when you've made some notes and answered these questions, start to create the story. This is the narrative of your dream life. You know, what does it look like? And when you do that, it's going to help you make choices around the work you do so that it fits in your dream. Because you don't want to now shift into, okay, what's the actual work, but it doesn't plug into your dream. Okay, it's got to plug into the overall vision of what your life is going to look like. And a step that's necessary, I think, is to make a list of all the things you can do and include the things that you want to do. So what you can do, what you have the skills for, the expertise to do, and what you want to do, whether you have the skills or not, okay? So what I recommend is just make a list. Take a piece of paper, make a list of all that you can do, all your areas of expertise, things you want to do, and then rate each item on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being this absolutely doesn't interest me in the least, and 10 being I'm excited about this, I would love doing that, okay? And then when you've got this list, prioritize, starting with the 10s, okay, write them down, and then work your way down. And, David, you know, my thought here is that I wouldn't bother considering anything that's a 5 or below. Because if you don't have, you know, 10s and 9s and 8s, I mean, that should be plenty for you to focus on. Because that's where your heart is. That's where your passion is. You could say, in a pinch, I can also do that, and I may do that kind of as a stopgap, you know, maybe a 3 or 4 because I have a lot of expertise. But it really doesn't move me. It doesn't excite me. But that can be a fallback for me. Okay, so that's another strategy. Okay, so if we move on to putting together the puzzle pieces and starting to shift into making this happen, look on page 8. I think we're still on page 8. And here are the puzzle pieces. The first one is you can have a great idea, a thought about a business, but it has to be marketable. People need to want it. They need to be able to pay you for it because you're not going to be working for free. Nobody works for free. Okay, you've got to be compensated. So you have to determine what's the marketable version of these things that I would love to do. And once you've figured it out, you have to go into the detail. Is there a need for the service or product? What will people want? So you've got to really articulate the offering so you're very clear about what it is that you are doing. You know, what is the service or product?
Yeah, Frankie, we had a question come in about marketability. You know, how do we know that people will want to buy it? And there's a very simple response to that. The big corporations do this.
Oh, I'm going to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that. Big corporations use best practices for marketing, for research, for operations. Why do they do that? Because it works. Okay, they don't do it because it doesn't work. So one of the things that we'll talk about in a couple of minutes is market research. So the second puzzle piece is acquiring, improving your knowledge or skills. You have to be really clear about and ruthless in your assessment. Do you have the skills and knowledge to do that particular work that you want to do? What are your strengths and weaknesses? You know, where do you need to shore up your expertise? Is it training that you need? Do you just need some specialized help? Maybe it's accounting help, maybe it's web help, like, you know, what is it that you need? Doesn't mean you have to learn that skill, but be really clear about what the strengths and weaknesses are.
It just occurred to me, Frankie, that if I were going to go down my street and market myself to prune people's fruit trees, I probably should study up on it. Doing other people's trees is going to be different from doing my own.
Exactly, because you don't know if what you're doing is right. Correct?
That would be nice to know, yeah.
then they'll come and sue you for damage. Anyway, so you've got to define what it's going to take to have the expertise to be successful in this area. That's the whole point. You're not doing all this work so you're not going to succeed. You're doing this work so that you will succeed. That's the point. But, there's a strategy, there's a plan, there's a process. Number 3 in putting together the puzzle pieces is getting the help and support that you need. Figure that out. And as I said, that's, you know, comes from the previous information. What do you need to help you achieve the dream? What are those steps that you have to take?
This is where most people fall down, because we tend to have a I want to do it myself kind of attitude, and this is...
Or they think they have to do it themselves.
Yeah. Please don't do it yourself. No one is successful alone.
No, absolutely. And, you have to be really strategic and aware. Where is your time best spent? If you are not an organized person, don't spend hours and hours struggling over doing paperwork and accounting stuff. You know, hire someone, and maybe you can't do that right from the get-go, but identify that as, you know, that's the first area that I need some help. So it can relieve me and make time available for me to focus on marketing or some other things where I'm really going to get the return. Your time is valuable. Time is money. 4 is knowing your market. As I said before, every large corporation does absolutely nothing around marketing until they understand what their target wants. They know who their target is. They define the demographic, you know, who's going to buy the product or service. They know them inside out. They do the market research. So, and, you know, market research can be very expensive. You don't need to spend a lot of money, but you do need to do some market research. This is critical. You have to get statistics from your market, and so don't miss this step. And so what you can do is just create a brief questionnaire about, you know, here's a service that I'm offering. Would you be interested in this? What price would you be comfortable paying? You know, this range. How much would the price determine whether you would buy this service? What are some of the other criteria that you would want to look at before hiring someone to do that service? Like, there's a whole bunch of questions. And then, you know what? Go to a mall, stop people, have a clipboard, and before the security escorts you out, stop people and ask them questions. Like, if your demographic is, let's say, early 20 people, you know, people in their early 20s, don't talk to someone who's in their 60s or 70s. Okay, focus on your target. Be clear about who's going to be buying that product or service. And then, you know, get a sampling of at least 100 people. I mean, if more if you can, but at least 100, and tabulate the results, you know. Be really scientific about it. And, you know, there's lots of resources on the Internet for market research, how you do it. You don't have to pay $20,000, $40,000 to get it done. You know, you can do it yourself.
Yeah, so Frankie, I would like to chime in a couple of things. Number one, 100 people sounds daunting. I would just say, you know, talk to 5. You know, just get an idea. Certainly the more the better. But just get the information you need to get to know your market. Another thing about market research that I like is testing. Go ahead and test it out. Consider it sort of like an experiment. And go ahead and offer your service to one person or a couple of people and see if you enjoy it, see if it works, see if the result is the way you envisioned it, see if you get a good response. So don't think that you have to build everything before you launch it and roll it out. Just go ahead and try it out. Just be willing to test it.
Yeah, and the testing is really important because you can change the price point, you can change the service offering, you can change anything you want because it's your business, okay? And so you want it to be successful, and if you have to tweak it, and usually there is tweaking that needs to be done. In terms of the number of people that you're going to research, I disagree with you, David. The more, the better, because that's going to give you... Now, if you feel uncomfortable, you know, how am I going to ask people? Start with 5, absolutely. Get comfortable. You know, they're not going to bite your head off.
Well, go ahead and start with your family and friends. That's okay,
yeah.
But, you know, make sure you expand that to talk to some
really
people.
Really try, because the point is the more information you have about people's buying patterns, what they want, the better for you. The easier it's going to be for you to really be clear about what the offer is. Okay, number 5 is stuff. And that includes collateral materials for marketing and equipment for conducting business and kind of all of the ancillary stuff you need. Be realistic. Be astute about what you need to start your business. You know, you don't have to overspend early on. Augment as you grow. But just make sure that you have what you need to be effective right from the start. You know, if you're underfinanced, like try and figure out and you need a new computer, whatever it is you need, make sure that you have that, if at all possible. Number 6 is deciding your business structure. And based on where you live, there are numerous business structures you can use for your business. Get advice. Do the research into the different types of business structures and the advantages and limitations of each. And, you know, the good thing is, you know, if at some point down the road you want to change to a different structure, guess what? You can do it.
Don't need to have any business structure.
Or you don't even have to have any business structure.
You know, you might need a business license so you don't get in trouble.
Yeah.
But that's easy.
Absolutely.
You fill out an application and pay, you know, $150, whatever it is, and boom, you're in business.
Yeah. And then number 7 is, you know, creating a transition plan from employment to self-employment. And if you're employed, be strategic, be careful, plan it out about how and when you transition into being self-employed. And we'll talk about a little bit more about that in just a second. So those are the 7 pieces, the puzzle pieces. Now, I want to refer you to page 9 of the study guide, which is really how to get started and, you know, creating the action plan for self-employment. So, David, I think, are you doing this the first one?
I have the easy one. Step 1 in your action plan for self-employment is to identify your passion. And Frankie did a great job in covering that in section 6, page 8 of the study guide. So she talked about how to identify your passion. So, Frankie, why don't you talk about step 2?
All right. Well, step 2 is a SWOT analysis, and that's not getting out a fly swatter and hitting all the flying little insects around you. SWOT is a business term, and it's done in every corporation when you're assessing a particular venture or plan. And it's basically strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So if you just take a blank piece of paper and you create a vertical line right down the middle, then create a horizontal line, you know, across the middle of the page, you're going to have 4 sections. So the top left, label that at the very top, strengths. The opposite side, the top right, label that weaknesses. Then going to the bottom half of the page, the bottom left, label that opportunities. And the bottom right, label that threats. Now, you can do a SWOT analysis if you're looking at your personal strengths and weaknesses and you're trying to figure out, you know, what's your passion. This is very applicable for that. But it's also very applicable for doing the business SWOT once you have an idea about what you want to do. And that's what I'm going to focus on now. So usually the top part of the SWOT, the strengths and weaknesses, are more the internal. You know, so it's about the business itself. So the strengths, what are the assets or strengths of the business idea? Let's say that you're right on a lake and you have a large population of people who walk along the lake, and let's say you have this idea about having an ice cream venture. So we'll use that as the example through this. So the strength is that you make the most unique, fantastic tasting ice cream. The weaknesses might be that you've never really worked on creating a large volume of that ice cream. Okay, so you kind of get the idea. Then we would look at the opportunities and threats, and that's more external. It's not about so much the business, but what are the external opportunities or threats to the business idea? And so for opportunities, you know, this is the competitive edge or the advantage that you would have, and the threats, these are the outside threats or some of the challenges to your business. So in the example of the ice cream business, well, the opportunity is that there is not an ice cream vendor within 3 miles of this lakeshore area. A threat is that space, commercial space, is limited. Okay, so you might be challenged to find some space where you could have your business run from. Okay, so that's kind of an idea of how you would do that. And when you've completed this and you really are thorough about the strengths, the weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, you suddenly get a picture and you can shift into an action plan. Okay, what do I have to do? How do I leverage my strengths and the opportunities? How do I mitigate my weaknesses and threats? Okay, and so you step into an action plan. I need to do this and this and this. And, you know, you can do a SWOT every couple of months kind of to see the lay of the land where you are in that particular time.
Yeah, it also strikes me that it's helpful to have outside input on your SWOT analysis because it's a brainstorming exercise and, you know, there's a whole lot more there than you might be aware of.
Absolutely. So you're going to talk about step 3, assembling puzzle pieces?
Again, you gave me the easy one, Frankie. Step three is assemble your puzzle pieces, and we've talked about that in section 7 on page 8 of the study guide. There's 7 puzzle pieces, and we call them puzzle pieces because these are things that individually you need, and when you put them together, they will help you start and build your business. And just to refresh your memory real quickly, number 1 is marketable versions of what you love. Number 2 is acquiring and improving your knowledge and skills needed for your business. Number 3 is getting help and support. No one is successful alone. Remember that. Number 4, knowing your market. Number 5 is stuff, the stuff you need for to conduct your business. And number 6 is deciding your business structure. And really, you might not have to. You might not need any structure. Number 7 is having a transition plan. And we'll talk about that in a bit. It's just having a plan is knowing what you're going to do to build your business while you're employed or while you're doing other things and how you're going to become fully self-employed, just having a plan. All 7 of those are necessary. When you put them together, that's what you need to become self-employed. 4, Frankie?
Yeah. Well, step 4 is creating your business plan. And there's lots of information out there about how to create business plans. There's lots of templates. It doesn't have to be, you know, a 20-page document. It can be a 1-page document. It's really the roadmap or the blueprint for the business. And it should include the activities that you need to take, the benchmarks, the goals that you have, whether it's over the next 3 months, the next 6 months, a year, you know, 3-year plan, that type of thing. You can make it whatever you want it to be, but you need a plan. It's like trying to build a house and you don't have a blueprint. You need some structure that kind of contains this plan for how you're going to move forward.
Yeah. There's this book called The One-Page Business Plan. It's only 1/4 inch thick. It looks like you can read it and go through it in an hour or two. So having a business plan is necessary and important, and putting one together does not have to be a big deal.
Okay, and step 5 is the transition plan. Okay, and this is if you're currently employed. You know, how do you transition from full-time employment to full-time self-employment? Well, what I did, you know, when I had my epiphany, I wanted to just go in Monday morning and just hand in my resignation and, you know, fly off into my new life. But thankfully, I didn't. Thankfully, I started to plan for how I was going to transition out of McDonald's and into, you know, what I wanted. And I didn't even know what I wanted. I just knew what I did not want. And I had faith that I would find what I wanted. But my transition plan is basically the strategy. And what you want to do, because we need income unless we have a whole bunch of resources, we need income to sustain us, because business is not going to go from zero to 100, you know, in the first week. Okay, it's going to take time to build your revenue and do that whole stream. So what I did was I took into consideration certain things. One, my immediate superior was going on a 6-month sabbatical in, I think it was like a month. Do you think it would have been wise for me to give my notice immediately? No, I waited until she was gone. Why? Because suddenly my value shot up exponentially, because I was the only one there who knew what was going on. And I knew that if I had told them before her sabbatical, they would have canceled her sabbatical or delayed it. Okay, and then I would have been out of potential money. And then I came in with a proposal. I said, I need to quit, and it was, you know, a lot of different reasons, but I don't want to leave you in the lurch, so here's what I propose. A plan whereby I will come in 3 days a week, core hours like 10:30 to maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock, and as a consultant, and here's my hourly fee, which was much more than, you know, my hourly rate. And so they were kind of between a rock and a hard place. And they said, okay, and so they kept me on for 6 months. So, you know, when she was going to come back. So that was one of the strategies that I used. So that's something you can think about. You know, how do I best, can I work part-time? Can I come in as a consultant? Like, how can I kind of keep my fingers in the pie while I am transitioning out and starting to build my business? And the other thing you need to consider is your type of business something that you can start part-time? You know, do you do it on weekends or in evenings? Like, how can you start to get into it, get an experience of this new business without severing, you know, the paycheck? And then you also, you know, part of the transition planning is you really need to do some projections of what your income is going to be, what your expenses are, you know, if things flow the way that you expect. So what's the worst case scenario? What do you absolutely have to bring in? What do you absolutely have to put out? Where can you cut some corners until your income starts to reach the level or exceed the level where you currently are? So that's what we're talking about with the transition plan. David, next step.
Okay, step six is pretty simple. Set a launch date, you know, and you'll have your plans for what you're going to do between now and then. But there's something about setting a specific date. It has a lot of power. Put it on your calendar. Put the date up on your wall. Put up a web page. Not a website. You know, website's big and complicated. It might cost a lot of money to put it together. It'll certainly take a lot more time than you have to put it together. Put up a one-page website with your business on it and then have your launch date on that. Tell all your friends. Tell all your family. Make it real that your business is launching on this day. And then it becomes news. You can submit press releases as well, you know. And then something kicks in that I found very, very powerful in my own life for building my businesses, and it's called necessity. Necessity is the mother of invention. So if it becomes necessary for you to make this work, to launch this business and have it be successful, you are committed to it, then you will find ways to do it. You will go to bed every night thinking about it. You will dream about it. You will, you know, have brainstorms in the middle of the night, or, you know, while you're out walking, or randomly occur to you, ooh, I could do this. So keep it on top of mind. And when you set a launch date, it becomes real, it becomes tangible. Put all your plans in place and then roll it out on your launch date. And make it a date that is doable for you. It doesn't have to be next week. It can be in 6 months. It can be in a year. It can be in 2 years. What matters is that this is the date that you commit to. You're going to do everything you can to make this happen and roll it out, your business, roll it out on this date. It doesn't mean you can't test. Of course, you should be testing and, you know, trying things out, you know, between now and then. But your official launch, your open house, your joining the Chamber of Commerce and whatever else to become a real business will happen on this day. Very, very powerful, kicks in. The idea that necessity becomes the mother of invention.
Absolutely. And so step seven, the final step, is prepare for success. Now, this doesn't mean just sitting around and just saying, you know, well, I'm prepared. Be prepared, you know, to plan. Do the work. Schedule the time to do the work. You know, get all those pieces put together. Be realistic, you know. Don't overextend. Don't underestimate or overestimate what it's going to take, you know, to launch a business and make it successful. I mean, it's all about you. It's the effort that you put into it. And that's it. Those are the action plan steps.
Well, one more thing about preparing for success. I'd like to introduce the idea of the upper limit problem. Not a whole lot of people know about this. You know, we know we have a pain threshold. We know we have a limit to the amount of pain that we can withstand. Not very many people know that there's such a thing as an upper limit problem, which is that we can only stand so much happiness before we get uncomfortable. And so prepare for success means being ready and willing to raise your upper limit and alter your self-identity from an employed person or an unemployed person to a business owner. A successful business owner, even a wealthy person. So the upper limit problem is real. It will hold you back unless you're aware of it and you raise it. So literally prepare for success. Prepare to become a successful person. Make yourself being willing to accept and be a successful person.
Great, great point.
On page 10 of the study guide, we put together some selected resources for you. There's a link there to recommended books. I got a lot of books from Amazon. Most of them are listed here, and they're all very, very helpful. None of them, no one book has all the answers, but, you know, a number of them I found to be very, very helpful. And SCORE, S-C-O-R-E, is an incredible organization. It's a volunteer organization. These are people that have been in business for a very long time. Most of them are retired, and they volunteer their services. They like to keep a hand in. They like to help others as mentors. So you can get free advice and mentoring for your small business from SCORE, a great organization. National Association for the Self-Employed, if you have any questions about health insurance or any resource or any problem with your local government agency, National Association for Self-Employed is a great organization for information and resources and support for self-employed people. The Small Business Administration is a governmental entity that its sole purpose is to help small business owners start, build, and grow businesses. They provide technical support, financial assistance in the form of loans. They do advocacy. And so realize, you're not alone here. There are a lot of people that want to see you succeed. The economy is going to grow, and the unemployment rate is going to go down by you becoming self-employed and maybe even employing other people. The government wants to see that happen, and they will help you make it happen. And there's some other resources here on the Internet, Idea Cafe, BusinessKnowHow.com, StartupNation.com, a lot of information, a lot of resources that'll give you the tools, give you the support needed to become self-employed. On page 11 of the study guide, we have some of our own resources here at Relationship Coaching Institute and buildingidealpractice.com. Our RCI, Relationship Coaching Institute, is the fastest and most economical way to become a life or relationship coach. We provide training, certification, marketing support, and practice building support when you become a member. And becoming a member is very, very affordable. We have payment plans. And, you know, this is not a pitch. I mean, we're not trying to sell anything here. We're just letting you know this is who we are. This is what we do. We have a free introduction to relationship coaching teletraining that you can sign up for on our website. Our next one is next week. We have a resource bank at Building Ideal Practice. There's a link there to it with lots and lots of free and low-cost resources for starting and building your small business or private practice. We offer a free quick start 6-week program for launching a coaching or consulting business. Remember, professional services is the number one fastest growing sector of the economy. We have a free relationship coaching boot camp, which is a 3-hour relationship coaching training. So if you want to know what relationship coaching is all about, if you're the kind of person that has always been the go-to person. People ask you for advice, or they lean on your shoulder or cry on your shoulder about their relationships. If you are interested in relationships and helping other people with their relationships, this is a great program for you to learn what that's all about, and you'll learn enough to be able to help your friends and family. We have a free audio and study guide on how to build a successful relationship coaching practice that Frank and I did. It's a very, very good program. I did a program a while back on how to choose a niche that I'm very proud of. It's a really good program on the topic. And then how to get clients in challenging times. It's really interesting that with the economy in such doldrums, and unemployment is high, and people are not spending money like they used to, that, you know, we tell ourselves in the service sector that, well, nobody's going to want to buy our service or to hire us. The opposite is true. When they need you, they need you. They'll find a way to hire you when they need you. You know, just think about it. If your refrigerator is broken, you're going to get it fixed. If your car breaks down, you're going to get it fixed, regardless of the balance in your checkbook. So how to get clients in challenging times is a great resource for getting an idea of how to earn an income in a down economy. So on page 12 of the study guide, I'd like to tell you a little bit about Relationship Coaching Institute, a little bit about who we are, because Entrepreneur Magazine cited coaching as one of the top home-based businesses to start. Money Magazine ranks coaching as the second fastest-growing profession next to management consulting. This is a fun and fulfilling profession, and there's an upside and a downside. The upside is anyone can be a coach. The downside is anyone can be a coach. And the secret to becoming a successful coach is following your passion, really wanting to be of service, and identifying a niche and being of service to that niche. We specialize, Frank and I specialize, in providing the training, the support, the mentoring to help people that want to get into coaching and build a successful coaching practice. So we have a whole list for you on how we help you do that. We have our top 11 reasons to join RCI. We're not going to go into those because this is not a pitch. Frankie, anything you want to say about RCI and encouraging people to check us out?
No, I think the links are there. You can register for the next teletraining call. We'll just follow the links on the homepage.
Okay. So that's all of the study guide. Let's get to the questions, Frankie.
Okay. All right. Cliff is asking, how do you wear all the hats you need to wear to be self-employed and take care of all the rest of life, like home ownership, relationships, pets, on and on and on?
He talks about food shopping, going to the bank, doing laundry.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
How do you do that now?
You know when the dishes get done in my house?
Mm-hmm.
It's on my lunchtime. I work in the morning. I go in the kitchen, you know, down the hall, make my lunch. And, you know, while the coffee's brewing, I like to have coffee after my lunch, I do the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And I might put in a load of laundry. So my wife teases me. I'm like the house husband. So I actually have more time and more flexibility to take care of all these things and balance everything because I'm self-employed. It's not harder. It's easier.
Yeah, I agree.
And aging parents and everything, you know, if my dad were to need something, I could drop everything on just about any day of the week because I'm self-employed.
Yeah, a lot of flexibility.
Yeah.
Okay, Yvette asks, will exploring self-employment nullify my employment benefits? Exploring, no. Starting to earn money means that you have to report that. But there's no problem exploring. Explore to your heart's content. You know, perfect time to do planning and to do market research and all the stuff that we've talked about today.
Right, so to qualify for employment benefits, you have to be looking for a job, though. And while you're looking for a job, you can certainly be exploring the idea of creating your own job and starting your own business. And everybody knows that self-employment benefits aren't forever. So, you know, by all means, don't delay self-employment or starting your own business. Definitely do it while you're looking for a job. You just might decide you'd rather be self-employed than look for a job. And then you might want to go ahead and take a look at the ideas we presented today, the ones that will generate income for you quickly. There's a lot of ideas that will. The $100 an hour idea, one you can start with. And then you can survive before you thrive. Survive by generating your own income, and then thrive by moving into what it is you really want to do as a self-employed person. Much better than hanging on to unemployment.
Absolutely. Okay, Harvey from Toronto is asking, how can I do the research necessary to know if people will want the product or service that I want to offer, as well as to know where the need actually is that is not being adequately met? I think we pretty well covered that. You need to put together a questionnaire. You need to interface with people, ask them, you know, the specific questions that are going to garner the information you're looking for. And just do some research on the internet for, you know, market research. How do you conduct it? What are some questions that you might want to ask? Anything you want to add to that, David?
No, but I think we did. We covered that before.
Yeah.
Here's a question. What are some ways of finding funding resources, venture capitalists and investors who may be interested in my project? Well, funding resources in terms of loans is easy, Small Business Administration. In terms of venture capital, that's way beyond my area of expertise and way beyond most small business and self-employed people. In terms of being of service to people, you can get sponsorships, you can get grants and foundation funding, but I wouldn't focus on getting funding because that becomes a full-time job in itself. I would focus first on your service or product, the business you want to build. Go ahead and get that off the ground and worry about venture capital later. You realize a venture capitalist or any investor, they want to invest in something that's real, not an idea.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go ahead and launch and build it before you can actually get funding for it most of the time.
And usually they're looking in the million, $2 million plus range, which is probably not what most of the people on this call are looking for in terms of funding. Another source is family and friends. You know, you look at a lot of the major corporations today, like Microsoft and Google, those founders went to family and friends for funding. So you may not be comfortable doing that, but if you, you know, strongly believe in your idea and treat them, you know, like you would any other investor, like give them the business plan, talk them through it. So that is another source. From, I can't pronounce her name, I'm sorry. She's saying, I'm a therapist and I've worked for agencies for over 25 years. My self-employment has always been very part-time and only supplemented my full-time salary. How could I possibly get enough clients to support myself as a self-employed professional? David, I'm going to give that to you since you are a therapist.
Well, it's actually fairly simple. All you need is two things, marketing and enrollment. Marketing is communicating what you do, many ways to do that. Enrollment is the process of building a relationship with folks that they come to know you, like and trust you, and hire you. And we have a whole practice building program around that at buildingyouridealpractice.com, so go ahead and check that out. We have lots of free programs on that topic, so you can join as a free member at buildingyouridealpractice.com to access those free programs. And at Relationship Coaching Institute, we are absolutely dedicated and committed to supporting our members' success. So you might decide to join Relationship Coaching Institute as a way to get the mentoring and the support and get some training in an area that's much more marketable to the public. Therapy is not marketable to the public. Nobody really wants therapy until they're in trouble. And however, everybody wants to be successful in their goals. Everybody will see the value in getting your support as a coach or consultant that will help them get the results they're looking for if you market that well. So get with us. That would be the answer I have for that.
And just to wrap that up, if you do want to have a conversation with us, you know, you can. There's lots of ways to contact us. There's an 800 number that you can call, 1-888-268-4074. Just let us know that you're interested in talking with someone and we'll get back to you. Or you can email me at Frankie, F-R-A-N-K-I-E, at relationshipcoachinginstitute.com.
Okay, well, that's all we have for you today. Thank you very, very much for joining us. This was a very important program for us to do, not because we know a lot about the topic, although we do know a lot about the topic, but because this is a huge problem in our society today. So we were happy to share with you what we know, what we've learned, what we've been able to find out about the secrets of self-employment. We hope this has been helpful. Please share it with people that you think might be interested or could benefit from the information. Let's take control of our employment and our financial situation by being self-employed, building our own business, doing it ourselves. We are not helpless. We are not stuck. We don't have to hope and beg and pray that somebody gives us a job. We can create our own job. We can make a living without a job. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.